The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but how can one follow the God of the Bible when he commands Christians to hate all gay people? There is no such command in the Bible, my friend. No such command. You've been listening to propaganda. You'd do better to study the Bible for yourself than to have somebody filter and distribute it for you. God hates nobody, and God commands us to love everybody. Now, the Bible does call the practice of homosexuality a sin. There's no getting around that, but the Bible calls a lot of practices sin and teaches that all human beings, Christians, non-Christians, everybody, teaches that all of us are sinners. All of us are in need of the forgiveness of Jesus. 10 years ago, if you had been talking to a Christian who believed that marriage was an institution for a man and a woman, would that really have sounded like such a far-fetched idea? I mean, come on. Let's be honest here. Oh, you may have disagreed with your Christian friend 10 years ago. You may have wished that he'd open his mind. You may have invited him to be more liberal and more progressive, but you would not have called him hateful. What you are doing now is repeating leftist media talking points. In any case, this emotionally dividing issue became controversy on steroids last week when several mayors from several large cities blasted the head of Chick-fil-A for sharing his beliefs about marriage. And in the name of tolerance, Chick-fil-A was not going to be tolerated. It was made abundantly clear that this fast food franchise is simply unwelcome in Boston, Washington, D.C., Chicago, and San Francisco. We'll discuss this story in great detail today. First, other news. When you only do a weekly talk show, you usually don't get breaking news. There actually is breaking news from just the last couple of hours. In Wisconsin, somebody went into a Sikh temple and killed and murdered six people. Now, that's really all the detail we have. So I'm going to do something unconventional for the media. I'm going to try out a whole new idea. Since we know nothing about it yet, we just won't talk about it. How's that? Now, there is other stuff to talk about. However, during his trip to Israel, Mitt Romney caused almost as much Middle Eastern controversy as the time Roman General Pompey arrived in Jerusalem to help settle a dispute. Speaking at a fundraiser with prestigious Jewish American financial contributors, Romney, in what looked like an attempt to sound like more of an Israeli supporter than President Obama, contrasted the Israeli and Palestinian cultures. He said, "Culture makes all the difference. And as I come here and I look out over this city and consider the accomplishments of the people of this nation, I recognize the power of at least culture and a few other things. As you come here and you see the GDP per capita, for instance, in Israel, which is about 21,000, and compare that with the GDP per capita just across the areas managed by the Palestinian Authority, which is more like 10,000 per capita, you notice that such a dramatically stark difference in economic vitality. And that is also between other countries that are near or next to each other, Chile and Ecuador, Mexico and the United States." Okay, so a senior aide to Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas offered a sharp response to the Associated Press. He said, "It is a racist statement." Of course. Of course, these days, the moment you disagree with somebody, you're disagreeing because you're a racist. Couldn't be because you have some point. It's just that you're a racist. Yeah, right. "It is a racist statement, And this man doesn't realize that the Palestinian economy cannot reach its potential because there is an Israeli occupation. It seems to me this man lacks information, knowledge, vision, and understanding of this region and its people. So that was the response from the Palestinian authorities. But just as unenthused conservatives began to see hope that their candidate might have a little fire in the belly after all, Romney, like most politicians, explained to us that he didn't really say what he said. In an interview with Fox News, the Massachusetts governor insisted he did not speak about the Palestinian culture or the decisions made in their economy. He went on to add, "That is an interesting topic that perhaps can deserve scholarly analysis, but I actually didn't address that. I certainly don't intend to address that during my campaign. Instead, I will point out that the choices a society makes have a profound impact on the economy and the vitality of that society." Those were the words of Mitt Romney. Okay, it's too bad Romney tried to walk the comment back. The last thing he needs is another flip-flop on his resume. And even if he gets away with it by calling the change an evolution, there's a more important reason to lament this changed tune. And that reason is this. The first statement, the original statement, was true. Culture does have an economic effect. While economists may argue about Romney's GDP figures, the main idea resonates. Crucial to Palestinian economy is the goal of the Palestinians to eventually have their own state. Supposedly, if that were to happen, Israel and Palestine would live side by side in peace and prosperity. That sounds wonderful. That sounds terrific. That sounds fantastic. Unfortunately, it will happen on the day Santa elopes with the Easter Bunny, Obama takes responsibility for an economy under his watch, and Eric Holder passes a lie detector test. Facts can be stubborn little things, but a listing of the facts, plain and simple, will show us why this Middle Eastern Shangri-La will never emerge. First of all, the Palestinians do not want a two-state solution. They want a one-state solution. The PLO charter does not recognize Israel's right to exist. If a two-state solution were put into place, we would next hear about the Palestinian right of return. The Palestinians were offered their own state in 1947 by the United Nations. Let me say that again, because I think very few people know this fact. The Palestinians were offered their own state in 1947 by the United Nations. They turned it down. The UN proposed two states, one Jewish and one Arab. That's what the Palestinians called themselves in those days, Arabs. The Arabs living in the land rejected a two-state solution and instead cooperated with surrounding Arab countries such as Egypt, such as Syria, such as Jordan, who openly bragged that they would destroy Israel. King Abd Suud of Saudi Arabia said in 1947, and I quote, "There are 50 million Arabs. What does it matter if we lose 10 million people to kill all of the Jews? The price is worth it." Azam Pasha, Secretary General of the Arab League, declared, "This will be a war of extermination and momentous massacre, which will be spoken of like the Mongolian massacres." The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem said, "I declare a holy war, my Muslim brothers. Murder the Jews, murder them all." Now, much to everyone's surprise, Israel won that war. It almost seemed like the days of the Old Testament again. It was incredible. It was miraculous. The Palestinian refugee situation came into existence as a result of the Arabs' attempt to exterminate the Jews. The problem was further complicated in 1967 when Israel's existence was again threatened during the Six-Day War. And at that time, when she won that war in 6 days, she expanded her territory, including the West Bank, where Palestinian refugees had been living for many years under Jordanian control, and the Gaza Strip, where Palestinians were living under Egyptian control. In 2005, Israel turned all of Gaza, over to the Palestinians. She withdrew completely. She was swiftly rewarded with a barrage of daily missiles from Gaza. Meanwhile, most of the greenhouses, a $14 million gift from wealthy Jewish Americans, were looted and destroyed. You think that might have some small effect upon Palestinian economy? You think? Inasmuch as the supposedly peaceful President Abbas has written some historical revision about the Holocaust, and Palestinian kindergarten children are taught to hate Jews and taught that Jewish people are devils, there is little reason to hope this situation will take new direction in the years to come. I'm telling you, folks, nothing Israel offers, no treaty, no gift, no gesture, no signature on a piece of paper, no free ice cream cones for all the Palestinian kiddies, none of that will make any difference. In the minds of her enemies, the land will be best shared when Jews are buried beneath the ground and Palestinians live on top. That's the way they want to share the land. Political correctness may shout about a moral equivalency between the two peoples, but that's only because truth has become so unpopular these days. Mitt Romney, you were on to something. Don't back down now. Well, I probably don't need to give you many details about this whole Chick-fil-A discussion. If you haven't heard about it by now, you've been living in a bubble, maybe like that bubble boy on Seinfeld playing Trivial Pursuit with George Costanza. But just in case, Chick-fil-A President Dan Cathy, in a radio interview, did spark this controversy. It was an interview with Baptist Press, and he said, "I think we are inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at him and say, we know better than you as to what constitutes a marriage. I pray God's mercy on our generation that has such a prideful, arrogant attitude to think that we have the audacity to define what marriage is about." Those were the words that sparked the controversy. Not long afterward, Boston Mayor Thomas Menino responded by writing a letter to Cathy. Let me read you this letter in its entirety. It's a classic. I compare this to the Declaration of Independence. Someday we're going to see this brilliant wit in museums. "To Mr. Cathy, in recent days you said Chick-fil-A opposes same-sex marriage and said the generation that supports it has an arrogant attitude. Now, incredibly, your company says you are backing out of the same-sex marriage debate. I urge you to back out of your plans to locate in Boston. You called supporters of gay marriage prideful. Here in Boston, to borrow your own words, we are guilty as charged. We are indeed full of pride for our support of same-sex marriage." By the way, that's a downright lie. The people of Boston never got together and voted to support same-sex marriage. In fact, the legislature put in power by the people voted against same-sex marriage. It was challenged. It was challenged in the courts. The court overturned it. So let's get the story straight, Mayor. Anyway, he says, "We are indeed full of pride for our support of same-sex marriage and our work to expand freedom to all people. We are proud that our state and our city have led the way for the country on equal marriage rights. I was angry to learn on the heels of your prejudiced statements about your search for a site to locate in Boston. There is no place for discrimination on Boston's Freedom Trail, and no place for your company alongside it. When Massachusetts became the first state in the country to recognize equal marriage rights, I personally stood on City Hall Plaza to greet same-sex couples coming here to be married. It would be an insult to them and to our city's long history of expanding freedom to have a Chick-fil-A across the street from that spot." That is from the mayor of Boston to the head of Chick-fil-A. I will drop in a comment of my own when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound even more beautiful.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. So, now a mayor has the right to tell somebody who can and cannot open a business in his city. I guess Obama's recent executive orders, where he simply ignores Congress and just does what he wants, are inspiring the little dictators in our country as well. Hey, have I missed something? I always thought public officials had to take at least one civics class. Mr. Mayor from Boston, have you heard of a little paragraph called the First Amendment? Of course, once one monkey starts it, other brave mayors follow suit. Yeah, that's so brave to take a stand for gay marriage in today's liberal, politically correct climate, where the media is going to immediately vilify anybody who says anything different about it. Boy, I'm telling you, these mayors, they're real heroes. Now, I'll be honest with you, if they had taken such a stand in the 60s or early 70s, before that many gay people came out of the closet, maybe then we could have admired their courage. I would have still disagreed with their positions, but at least it would have been an example of some real guts in those days. As for taking such a stand for gay marriage today, don't pat yourselves on the back, gentlemen. At least Mayor Edwin M. Lee of San Francisco seems to understand that as mayor, he has no legal power to tell a company what to do. In his case, it's merely a strong suggestion. In his case, he just made it sound like a threat. On Twitter, the mayor wrote, "Closest Chick-fil-A to San Francisco is 40 miles away, and I strongly recommend that they not try to come any closer." Of course, illegal immigrants are welcome in San Francisco. That's a sanctuary city. But an American businessman who's so deranged in his thinking that he believes marriage is for a man and a woman, well, he's not welcome. Now, never mind. Forget San Francisco. Let's go to Chicago instead. Because nobody was as feisty as Mayor Rahm Emanuel of Chicago. He said that Chick-fil-A values are not Chicago values. Chick-fil-A values are not Chicago values. Boy, you can say that again, Mayor. You can sure say that again. You mean the kind of values that trace themselves back to the days of Al Capone? Oh, wait. You must mean the present. You must mean the kind of Chicago values where you invited the racist anti-Semite Louis Farrakhan to help with city security. Are those the values you're protecting, Mayor? Look, folks, I don't care if you're gay or straight. I don't care if you're liberal or conservative. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. I don't care if you're Christian or atheist. I would think all Americans would wake up and confront this assault upon freedom of speech. Now, the good news is that many have. We don't know exactly how many people showed up at Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day. This was organized by Governor Mike Huckabee, but we do know that 500,000 registered for the event on Facebook. And how many people aren't even on Facebook or don't even mess with Facebook? How many would have just gone to that event without registering? Even Jon Stewart, a liberal, a comedian, no lover of evangelical Christians, no lover of the politically conservative, even Jon Stewart said, "I'm pretty sure you can't outlaw a company with perfectly legal business practices because you find their CEO's views repellent. Not sure which amendment covers that, but it's probably in the top one." That was from Jon Stewart. Jon Stewart, this is huge, people. It's encouraging to see this kind of public reaction. But I got to tell you, it's also rather unsettling to realize that people are just now figuring out that the whole gay thing has become a free speech issue. This is part of the militant gay agenda. And when I say militant gay agenda, I don't believe that most gays are part of the militant gay agenda. I don't believe the militant gay agenda speaks for most homosexuals, but they do make the loudest noise. And there is a militant agenda. And the agenda is exactly this, to make it against the law to even speak against homosexuality. Now, that law has already been passed in Canada. And here in America, armed with lingo such as "we must resist hate speech," we too are fast on the way to passing similar laws. Congress already passed a hate crimes law, which says that if violence is done against a gay person and the perpetrator claims he was inspired by some pastor's sermon, where the pastor might have just read a Bible verse, the pastor can be held responsible. It is now against the law to say anything disparaging against homosexuality in any California classroom. SB 43 is the name of that law. They are also trying to make it against the law for psychiatrists to offer reparative therapy to homosexuals, even if the gay person himself seeks it out and says he wants reparative therapy. Well, if you'd like to weigh in on any of this, As always, our phone number, 888-344-1170. You can also reach us through Facebook, through Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.net. And on Facebook says, excellent, and you are right, Bob. Oh, she's talking here about our other story, Romney and the Palestinians. So that's what these people are weighing in on. Excellent, and you are right, Bob. Thank you for stating the plain truth once again and putting history back into the dialogue. Mario says this, I guess one way to get, he's talking about Romney and the Palestinians again, I guess one way to get his racist and xenophobic base energized is to keep saying how we are better than the rest of the world. While the economic comparison may be accurate, it doesn't help when it comes to make friends with these inferior countries. Well, Mario, before you take a bow in front of the mirror for your tolerant intellect, allow me to point out two things. Your statement that Romney's base is racist is itself a bigoted statement. That's a heck of a lot of people you just insulted. Are the black conservatives racist? How about Hispanic conservatives who plan to vote for Romney? Are they racist? And if they are not racist, they must have some other reasons, reasons other than race for supporting Romney, right? And if they do, why can't the white people also have non-racial reasons for supporting Romney? Meanwhile, Mario, regarding the Arab hatred of the Jews, the teaching of kindergarten children to hate Jews, the plan to exterminate all Jews, and the refusal to accept Israel's right to exist were not even mentioned in your comment. So much for your concern about racism and xenophobia. Our friend Grouchy says all the Arabs, Palestinians, have to do is make a short statement. The Jews have a right to exist. No more, no less. Larry says, well done, Bob. Thanks for correcting the revisionist history that the liberal media has forced down our throats. Winston is kind of defending Romney a little bit here. He says, he's kind of saying, sure, Romney's being a politician, but so what? He says, Romney said culture makes all the difference in a country's economic prosperity. That was his point. I don't think Romney backed off at all. He only reiterated it in his statement that he did not specifically single out Palestine. Well, yes, he did, Winston. He did. And then even Winston says, wink, wink. And he says in quotes, and technically that is true, he's threading the needle, and we all get his point. And in his book, No Apologies, he made the contrast quite clear that Israel's economy based on freedom will prosper over those who only want to hate and destroy. As Golda Meir once said about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict now in its 64th year, it will only end when Palestinian mothers and fathers love their own children more than they hate Jews. Well, that was well said, my friend. I liked at least that part of your email. And that was an interesting quote from Golda Meir. Well, I have an annual tradition on this show. It doesn't always come at the same time of the year, but today seemed like a good day to do it because it's obviously inspired by the whole Chick-fil-A thing. So I'm going to share some things that I have shared before, but probably we couldn't say this too much because it's the correcting of a lot of falsehoods. At least once a year, I like to take some quality time with this electrically charged issue of same-sex marriage and present this conservative case. And I mean to intend it not just morally, but legally, intellectually, psychologically, and compassionately. And of course, people will teach that a Christian can't do any of those things. Christians aren't compassionate. They know nothing about psychology, nothing about the law. Christians certainly don't have an intellect. I mean, how stupid if you believe in God. But I am going to make such a case, and I will make it when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric. This is your host, Bob Siegel. I mentioned before the break that once a year I like to talk about this whole same-sex marriage controversy, and with all that's going on with Chick-fil-A, I didn't think I'd find a better time this year to discuss it than today. Now, I don't mind people disagreeing with my beliefs. It is not a litmus test for my friendship or for me being kind that you agree with me. On the other hand, misrepresenting my position is another matter altogether. Now, I cannot claim to speak for all conservatives right now, although I know I'm speaking for at least many of them. The sincere hope and objective right now is for people to better understand where we conservatives are coming from. Feel free to argue against the presentation. Just know what you are arguing against rather than rushing to judgment. That's all I ask. So the first challenging statement, and these are all statements I've heard in real conversations, Bob, isn't it important to speak against hate? Those who are against gay marriage are filled with hate, aren't they? My friend, with all due respect, that's quite a sweeping generalization. Have you met and conversed with every single person opposed to gay marriage? Have you allowed them to speak for themselves, or are you letting others filter and restate their opinions? And how exactly are you defining hate? Does merely disagreeing with something mean that we hate? You obviously disagree with my position. Do you hate me? I don't think you would say that you do. I respect your desire to be loving, but please be careful here. Stop, take a deep breath, and notice the subtlety of what is going on. Otherwise, you may find yourself guilty of the same kinds of bigotry you claim to be against. But Bob, disapproving of homosexuality is like disapproving of an entire race. Because gay people were born that way. Actually, nothing of the sort has ever been proven, and I'm going to get to that shortly. But for now, even if you disagree, viewing sexuality as different than race or skin color isn't really that far of a stretch, is it? You know who gets especially insulted when this comparison is made? A lot of African Americans. Did you know that black pastors all over the country are up in arms over the way Chick-fil-A is being treated? Especially when we remember that up until just a couple of months ago, President Obama held the exact same view as Chick-fil-A. At least he said he did. Were you calling President Obama hateful? And black pastors are now very upset over Obama's flip-flop on that issue. To use some common terms, can you yourself show compassion and tolerance for people who have a view of homosexuality contrary to your own? But, Bob, how can you speak of tolerance when we're suppressing the rights of gay people? Shouldn't they be allowed to marry? Look, nobody says they can't marry. In fact, gay churches and other liberal churches have been performing homosexual weddings for years, for decades. All we ask is that they not force the rest of us to change our definition of marriage. If they are entitled to their view of marriage, we are also entitled to ours. But Bob, in most states, a gay marriage isn't recognized legally. Well, that's true. But many who oppose changing the definition of marriage still support civil unions. A lot of states have civil unions, and we're probably on the road to all of them having them in time. With such an ideal scenario, there would be no financial benefit denied and no hospital visitation suppressed. That's always the concern that's shared. So add this up. Legally, gay couples would have the same rights, and religiously, depending upon the church, they would have the affirmation of marriage. Now, 14 years ago, militant gay activists, while fighting for civil unions, promised that this would be enough. That promise has been broken. I appreciate your desire to be fair and compassionate. I really do. But please think about this for a moment. If gay couples can get married in liberal churches, and if they can also have legal civil unions, and if they decide to then call themselves married, as they have been doing for many decades, And if nobody is passing any law against their free speech to describe their relationship any way they choose, what possible reason remains for demanding that the entire country change its definition of marriage other than to insist on affirmation from people who have a right to their own opinion about varying lifestyles? But Bob, the rest of us are not affected by gay people getting married. Yeah, yeah, that's the $50 million challenge thrown at conservatives these days. How exactly does it hurt your own marriage or your own family if two gay people get married? Now, on its surface, this would seem to be a fair question. Very fair. Does another person's marriage have any direct connection to your own? Of course not. But I think we're missing a much bigger point. As Americans, our lives, our marriages, and our families do not exist in isolation. We are profoundly influenced by the direction of society as a whole. As a pastor, I have counseled many gays, and I am sympathetic to their plight. Of course I can understand their desire to be married and happy like everybody else. At the same time, I would be lying if I said that gay marriage does not affect the rest of us. The truth is, one can list many such effects, and I'm going to do so right now. First of all, the effect on your children. Even if your children live in a stable, two-parent, heterosexual home, you are only one of many influences in your child's life. Homosexuality is being presented today as an alternative lifestyle in some places, even at the kindergarten level, with books such as Heather Has Two Mommies. In fact, a recent California ruling that I referred to earlier now insists on a new way of teaching about families out of respect for gay and transgender families. It is also against the law for any government institution in California to speak negative of gays. Although a good deal of this stuff was already going on, legalization of gay marriage will give this militant gay agenda even more teeth. Please do not try to tell me that these developments will not be affecting your child directly. And then there's another effect, the effect on other people's children. For years, we have admitted as a society that children are better off in a two-parent home. Now, before you get all defensive, yes, there are loving single parents who have done a wonderful job. And yes, there are all kinds of unhealthy, dysfunctional two-parent families. We get that. That's rather obvious. But my friend, pointing out exceptions to the rule ignores this giant rule staring us in the face. To make the comparison, we have to be ideal. Ideally, children need a healthy mother and a healthy father. Obviously, children don't need unhealthy mothers and fathers, but all things being equal, considering everybody's healthy, children need a healthy father and a healthy mother. They need both because men and women are different, and each one has different things to offer in a child's upbringing. We used to feel free to admit this rather obvious truth, but we've gotten so used to rolling over and playing dead for the militant gay activists, we now try to shove truth under a rug. The more children are raised by fathers and mothers, the more they're raised by fathers and mothers together, the better we will be as a society. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that. To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. Bob Siegel Show. How does it hurt me personally or you personally if some gay couple gets married? Well, personally, it may not, but I'm talking about the effect on society. And when we're in another context, when we're not talking about homosexuality, if you asked in isolation the question, is it better for children to have a mother and a father? You'd say, okay, well, there's wonderful single parents, but ideally a healthy father and mother would be better because males and females bring different things, different perspectives. And I think we all know that. In fact, isn't it interesting how many self-described liberals insist we need diversity of genders on the Supreme Court? Because women will bring a different perspective. And yet when these same people are asked about males and females as role models for children, they suddenly switch gears. Studies on ancient Rome and other cultures show that when the family breaks down, the entire country breaks down. So once again, I would say that gay marriage has a rather large influence upon our joint future as Americans. There's also a legal effect. There will be a legal effect. This stuff that the mayor's unsuccessfully attempted with Chick-fil-A, that's just the beginning. Don't kid yourself. Now, I'm going to tell you something honestly, people, and some of you may be surprised to hear me say this as a conservative. If I thought for one moment that legalized gay marriage would end this matter, I would have less of a problem with it. If I thought the militant gay community would now be satisfied once all marriages are legal and view things as square, if they could finally admit that they are no longer a persecuted minority and their plight is over, perhaps gay marriage would be something we could all live with. I would still be concerned, but I could live with it. Unfortunately, the militant gay movement has no such attention, and this latest right is only a small part of a much bigger agenda. Now, again, and I can't repeat this too many times, I do draw a distinction between most homosexuals who want to just be left alone and the militant gay agenda, which claims to speak for the majority. Despite my sympathy to the former, unfortunately, it is the militant gays whom we are being forced to deal with. Let's be honest, the real militant gay agenda is to someday make it against the law to even say that homosexuality is wrong. Oh, they're smart enough to chip away one inch at a time at this because they know what a stupid country we have become and what a naive people we have become. But make no mistake, the instigation of thought police is the true agenda. And you know who wrote a book called The New Thought Police? Tammy Bruce, liberal talk show host. Well, I guess she's gotten conservative on some things, but she's a self-professed lesbian. And as a lesbian, she says that the thought police are coming with this issue. And of course, she's gotten all kinds of flack and persecution from other lesbians for speaking her mind. She's a brave, courageous woman. As a matter of fact, that agenda was shamelessly written by Marshall Kirk and Hunger Madsen as a manifesto back in the late 1980s. It was called After the Ball, How America Will Conquer Its Hatred of Gays in the 1990s. This manifesto was an open, strategic agenda to launch a patient and persistent legal and media movement whose goal was to silence anti-homosexual speech. The strategy included having lovable gay characters on sitcoms who encounter old-fashioned, narrow-minded friends. But that was only the beginning. In the midst of debates, the soldiers of this cause were to portray anyone who disagreed with homosexuality as some kind of hate monger. Even those whom they knew had a love for gays, but merely disagreed with their lifestyle. Here's a quotation from the book, After the Fall. I think you're going to find this a chilling quote. They say, our effect is achieved without reference to facts, logic, or proof. Through repeated infralogical emotional conditioning, the person's beliefs can be altered whether he is conscious of the attack or not. Indeed, the more he is distracted by even spacious surface arguments, the less conscious he will be of the true nature of the process. In short, jamming succeeds insofar as it asserts even the slightest doubt and shame into the previously held unalloyed beliefs regarding heterosexuality and homosexuality. That was from the book After the Ball, kind of a militant gay manifesto. But calling somebody a homophobe or hate-filled does not go far enough today. After achieving the goals of guilt and greater sensitivity, the militant gays are trying their hand at actual speech legislation. As I said, such legislation has already passed in Canada. Now they're trying to jam it through in the United States under the guise of hate crime. Since violent crimes are already crimes that already have penalties, judging motives such as hate really makes hate crime law hate speech law. Saying that you love the homosexual but simply disapprove of his actions isn't enough. You will still be branded as hateful, and this will be in the name of tolerance. Christians and other conservatives must be tolerant of the opinion that homosexuality is natural. Of course, homosexuals need not be tolerant of the fact that we might have another point of view. Legalizing gay marriage is going to open up Pandora's box full of litigation. I'm just waiting for pastors to be sued for not being willing to perform gay marriages. Supposedly, there's this thing called separation between church and state that the left loves to keep ringing in our ears. But the separation never really works both ways, does it? We hear all the time about how the church must never interfere with the state, yet for some reason, this separated state is allowed to interfere with the church if the church holds a viewpoint it doesn't like. Already, a Methodist church in New Jersey was sued for not allowing a gay couple to get married on their property, and the lawsuit was won. They don't even have legal gay marriage in New Jersey. It was just going to be a civil union. The church wouldn't allow it. They were sued. The lawsuit was won. Can you just imagine what's going to start happening in California now? I have heard gay activists argue both ways on this issue. On one hand, they point out that Christians need not be concerned with any marriage other than marriages in the church. Strictly secular marriages, supposedly, are none of their business, and Christians have nothing to worry about. But then, when chastising churches for refusing to support gay marriage, the argument is that Christians are disrespecting equal protection under the law, a law which is justified under the guise of not affecting Christianity. The circular reasoning is seldom noticed. And then I said I was also going to talk to you about the psychological effect. Since homosexuality is emotionally unstable and psychologically abnormal, I know you don't want to hear that. I know that sounds bad. I'm just being factual. If it is emotionally unstable and psychologically abnormal, exposing kids to the teaching that it is natural harms the child's healthy development. If this is true of the children being indoctrinated from kindergarten on up, one can only imagine the confusion passed on to children being raised by gay couples. I did not say the gay couple was unloving, so don't misquote me. I did not say the gay couple was unloving. I'm sure they're very loving. I merely point out the dysfunction. I know. The fat's in the fire now. Somebody had to say it. It might as well be me. That's what we do on this program. We make the obvious obvious. Too many conservatives dance around this issue. They are willing to call gay marriage wrong, but they are unwilling to call homosexuality itself wrong. Well, let's be clear. If there is nothing wrong with being gay, then there is nothing wrong with gay marriage. And gay people make good sense when they point this out. Unfortunately, it begs the more obvious question. Is there something wrong with homosexuality? Yes, there is. It causes psychological harm. Now, I don't say that to sound condemning. I don't say that to make anyone feel unwarranted guilt. But the truth is, people are involving themselves in a process that is unnatural. This was the widespread teaching of the American Psychiatric Association prior to the year 1973. I'll bet you don't know how the American Psychiatric Association declassified homosexuality as an emotional disorder. I'll tell you when we return from the break, and you are going to be surprised.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Many people are unaware of the circumstances which led to homosexuality being declassified as an emotional disorder by the APA back in the year 1973. You may never have heard about the pressure from gay activists and gay psychiatrists who were involved in the meetings. You should know that the discussions leading to the vote were not characterized with scholarly study, but instead a great deal of fear. In fact, so extended was the pressure that only one-third of the ballots sent out were ever returned. People wanted to vote on secret ballot. They felt some pressure. But only one-third of the ballots were even returned. Out of those returned, 58% agreed to declassify homosexuality as a mental disorder. Get that? 58% out of the one-third returned. Prior to this time, homosexuals not only sought help from psychologists, but also received healing. Dr. Charles Socorides, who had successfully treated gays for more than 20 years, said that the militant gay movement was responsible for the greatest medical hoax of the century. Now, although many gay people sincerely claim that they cannot remember a time when they weren't attracted to the same sex, that does not necessarily mean that they were born homosexuals. Elizabeth Moberly, a research psychologist for Oxford and Cambridge, explains this by pointing out that people absorb their key influences of sexual orientation between the ages of 2 and 5, a time in life most of us would not remember anyway. Even molecular biologist Dean Hammer of the National Cancer Institute, who headed one of the famous studies which sought to find genetic explanations, said, and I quote, "Our studies try to pinpoint the genetic factors, not to negate the psychosocial factors." It may someday be discovered that there are two types of homosexuality, a learned behavior and a genetic predisposition. In either case, the homosexual in all likelihood did not choose his or her sexual orientation and should not be blamed for inward feelings or impulses. But likewise, in either case, the acting out of such impulses would still be a natural behavior. It's believed that one can be born with a predisposition toward alcoholism too. But would you encourage an alcoholic to drink? But Bob, if homosexuality is really so unnatural, how come most people don't view it that way? Most people do view it that way. In the states that have put this thing up for a vote, we've got something like, I think we're like 37 states now that have voted against this. I'm convinced most people do view it unnaturally, but they're intimidated. And they're not just intimidation, they even lie to themselves. They have trouble admitting this because of today's political climate. It's been growing now for over 3 decades. I went to high school in the early 70s. I came out of a home so sheltered that for years I had never even heard of homosexuality. When I discovered that certain fellow actors in my high school drama department were gay, and that was one place where people were able to come out in the closet and be treated kind of decently in those days, the whole world of theater. When I discovered that some of my friends were gay, my response originally was that seemed kind of odd, despite the fact that they were obviously very nice people. Of course, in a theater atmosphere where it's very liberal, people quickly learn to dismiss such feelings as rigid and old-fashioned. So in no time at all, I decided that varying sexual lifestyles must be respected. There was no room for judgment. There was no room for what I would have called backwoods thinking. In hindsight, it's interesting to note that my first reaction had nothing to do with the Bible because I wasn't even a Christian or Bible believer at the time. I was merely making a simple, rather obvious observation. Men were meant for women, and vice versa. Still, in time, it was easier to accept the idea that my feelings were outdated than to consider the possibility that the majority opinion may be mistaken. But what does the majority really think? That's an interesting question. Have you ever seen a sitcom where two men danced or one accidentally kissed another? Oh, we see it all the time. It's a common device, and the audience laughs all the time. In fact, it's hysterical. It's an easy, guaranteed laugh. But why do people laugh? Why did the writers and producers of the sitcom obviously intend for people to laugh? If indeed we recognize the normality of that relationship, what exactly strikes us as humorous? Centuries ago, Hans Christian Andersen, the very brilliant storyteller, illustrated the value of a simple childlike mind. Remember his story of the emperor's new clothes? A charlatan tailor, wanting to rook the king of a fortune, fashioned him a set of fine apparel, supposedly. There was one stipulation. Only intelligent people could see these clothes. Of course, the clothes didn't really exist, so nobody ever really saw them. But nobody wanted to be viewed as unintelligent either. So they reasoned to themselves, well, if I can't see the clothes, the problem must be with me. After all, everybody else sees them. See, truth is determined by the majority. Now you remember the rest. At a grand parade, one small child tugged his mother's skirt and said, but Mommy, he's not wearing any clothes. And there was something in the shock value of that kid. Everybody turned to somebody else and said, am I crazy? I don't see those. Do you see? You see, nakedness was once nakedness. Now, as the result of one clever tailor, the word naked in relationship to the king was politically incorrect. Could this same tailor have visited the United States? Maybe what we need today is an innocent child, like the one in the fairy tale, some red-faced, nose-running kid who hasn't studied genetics, hasn't studied psychology, hasn't studied scripture, and hasn't had sensitivity training. All he knows is what he sees and feels. Maybe if something looks unnatural, it is unnatural. Maybe we all know the truth and are afraid to admit it. Maybe the king isn't wearing any clothes. Okay, now, so that's my case. I do want to say something else, though. And I want to apologize to the gay community, because I think for many years, particularly in the 70s, when same-sex people were first coming out of the closet, I think the church did a great disservice to the gay community. Instead of saying, hey, Jesus loves you, and yeah, we view that as a sin, but you know what? We have sin too. Join our church. Be with us. We'll all struggle together with our sin. Gays were treated as if they were in a class by themselves. I'll never forget a number of years ago, I was doing outdoor open-air evangelism at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff. Beautiful campus, beautiful location. And when I was done, a fellow walked up to me, and this was one of those, hey, I have a friend, and after a while, you figure he's not really talking about his friend. He's talking about himself. But he came up to me and he says, I really like some of the things you said. And you sounded very open-minded. But I do have a question. What is the Bible's view of homosexuality? And I said, well, the Bible does say that that's wrong. But that doesn't mean that God hates homosexuals. He says, well, I have a friend who's gay. And again, I believe he was really talking about himself. But I let it go. I didn't want to put it on the spot. So, okay, you have a friend who's gay. Yes, go ahead. And, well, my friend wants to explore Christianity, wants to visit churches. But because he's gay, he's very frightened over the way he'll be treated. And I said, well, look, I can't speak for all churches, but the organization that brought me out today, they're an organization called Campus Ambassadors. It's a group of Christian students. They're from all kinds of different denominations and churches. And I can guarantee you that if your friend joins up with this group of people, they will treat him right. He can share his struggles. He can share his same-sex struggles. And they'll say, yeah, that's a sin, but God loves all of us. We have sins too. We're no better than you. We're just as sinful. We're all in need of forgiveness. We are going to all go row that boat together. I said, I guarantee your friend will be treated with that kind of respect. Tears rolled down his cheeks, and it became so obvious that we were talking about him. But I want to tell you something. I walked away from that conversation kind of sad, because even though in this particular case, I was able to guarantee him that this group of people would be loving, I knew that with many churches and with many Christians, I would not have been able to give him that kind of guarantee. So the church has not done a great job of reaching out to gays. And for that reason, on behalf of Christians everywhere, I want to extend an apology to the gay community. That has changed somewhat. I attend a church here in San Diego, Skyline Christian Fellowship. There are many gay people that attend this church because they are treated in such a loving way at that church. We'll see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.